So I just want to first begin by acknowledging the contributors to this presentation, my graduate students, Jordan Thomas, Brianne Bishop, and Jill Abel, and then my good friend and colleague, Mike Smith. So for the next few minutes, what I want to visit with you about are, to begin with, some management considerations related to fixed-time AI. And the focus of the presentation will dwell largely on fixed-time AI approaches for both beef heifers and cows. And not having a real good handle on the extent to which fixed-time artificial insemination is being used out here in the West. It is being used extensively in the Midwest. I'm going to go through some of this more or less step by step. I also then want to follow with an overview of protocols, and because of the time constraints, I think because of the amount of material I've got to kind of plow through, we'll have to take questions, I think, later. So if we consider what's occurred over the last number of years, we've seen, this is a graph illustrating beef semen sales in terms of export sales as well as custom collected semen and domestic semen sales here in the United States. We've seen a significant growth in the volume of semen, that beef semen specifically, that has been marketed. And I think in large part, we can attribute some of that success in terms of growth to the advent or development of these protocols. Because in many cases now what we're seeing is being able to eliminate the need to heat detect cattle or reduce the period of time that we heat detect cattle. It's really facilitated an expansion, I think, in many cases because of the way these protocols are working and how effective they are in working in many cases. And so that's what I want to spend some time on with the discussion this morning. To begin with, though, I think we need to talk about some management considerations related to synchronization and timed AI. And when we began a lot of the work in the Midwest relative to this, this was by far and away the biggest question that we received. Do we know what to expect at calving from cows that conceive on the same day to the same sire? And each one of these panels illustrate groups of cows that conceived on the same day of the breeding season to the respective sire that's shown above each of these panels. And essentially what each of these illustrates is this green bar in each of these panels represents day 283 of gestation and the number of cows calving either side of that time point. So we don't really collect that data any longer because it more or less told the story over a period of time in terms of what is the answer to that question. And when we boiled all the data down, essentially if we looked at it relative to maximum percentage of cows that did calve on the peak day of the calving season that conceived out the same day of the breeding season, it ended up being about 20%. So let's work through the math relative to that. If I breed 100 cows today and 60% of those cows conceive, and 20% of those cows calve on the peak day, that ends up being 12 cows. And essentially what we hear from farm managers that are beginning to use this more aggressively, they actually feel as though they're doing a much better job at calving time managing their cows. So the other thing I think is really important to consider is the impact of synchronization on calving distribution. And Harlan Hughes, as many of you know, that writes for Beef Magazine, indicates that higher profitability herds, what he sees is by moving later calving cows forward toward the first and second calving intervals, you actually see an improvement in the efficiency and the profitability of those herds based on calf age, uniformity, weaning weight, et cetera. Essentially, what his data shows is that the high production herds have roughly 61% of the cows calving by day 21, 85% by day 42, and 94% by day 63. This is an illustration of some of the herds we worked with back early on when we began working with timed AI protocols. And there's a little over 1,500 cows represented here, 1,500 calvings. All these cows were placed on a timed AI protocol, had one opportunity at fixed time AI, and then went into cleanup pastures 2 weeks later. But essentially what we saw was by day 15, 65% of the cows had calved, by day 21, 70%, by day 30, 82%, by day 42, 93%. So advancing that timeline relative to calving profile is significant in terms of what occurs as a result of it. This is another example that to me really illustrates more or less the impact that can be realized over a period of time. And I think Cliff Lamb will talk more about this later on in his presentation. But this is data that we collected from one of our university herds, in which case the cows, prior to the time we began work there, had never actually been placed on a synchronization program. They were simply exposed for natural service. So this red line illustrates the calving distribution for those cows during a time when they were exposed for natural service with no synchronization. The blue line, to me, makes total sense. We then began imposing synchronization protocols on these cows, and all the insemination was based on detected estrus with the aid of heat watch. And so by imposing that, by more or less controlling or taking control of the estrus cycle, we advanced that line or moved that line further to the left. This is, however, what really surprised us. When we moved to fixed time AI represented by this purple line, essentially it shifted that line even further to the left. So despite the fact we were breeding cows off of heat watch, when we were breeding according to heat, we were still able to improve what we're now seeing relative to calving distribution patterns as a result of it. I would argue that that is a cumulative effect, because once you begin that process, the benefit that you realize over a period of time, I think, more or less multiplies. So some considerations related to heifer management, and you'll hear this throughout the presentations, I think, over the next 2 days as well. There's good data going back as far back as the 70s that really clearly points out that heifers that conceive earlier during their first breeding season stay in the herd longer and produce more pounds of beef over their lifetime. I want to focus just for a moment on these are management practices prior to the first breeding season that I think are really critical in terms of heifer management. But I want to take a moment and just really focus on a pre-breeding exam, reproductive tract scores, and for those of you that aren't familiar with it, more or less lead you through a brief discussion of what's involved. So the tract scores basically are based on evaluation of the heifer's reproductive tract prior to the breeding season, both in terms of uterine considerations as well as palpable structures in the ovaries. Scores range from 1 to 5. And if you look at what those numbers correlate to, a tract score 1, upon assignment, those heifers would be considered to have an infantile tract. Scores 2 and 3 would be non-cycling, pre- or peripubertal. We consider a tract score 2 heifer to be greater than a month away from reaching puberty, a tract score 3 within a month. And if we move down to 4s and 5s, those heifers are cyclic. They have reached puberty. A 4 we would describe as being in the follicular phase of her cycle, and a 5 would be in the luteal phase. When we talk about the uterine horn considerations, basically you can see there's distinct differences relative to tone. The big difference here relative to distinguishing a 4 versus a 5 is largely based on some of the things Mike talked about relative to hormonal influence of the estrous cycle. So these heifers would be more under the influence of estrogen, whereas tract score 5 heifers would be more under the influence of progesterone. And then the corresponding differences relative to palpable structures on the ovaries. So when should these be done? And that's an important point. They should be done roughly 4 to 6 weeks before the beginning of the breeding season, or in some cases up to 2 weeks before synchronization. But and I'll show you some data here in a moment. We have a large on-farm heifer development and marketing program in Missouri. But essentially, in our hands, we would recommend that heifers are ready to be placed on a sync program when at least half of those heifers track score 4 or 5. If you're down in the 20-30% range that are track scoring 4 and 5, I don't care what protocol you put them on, they're probably not going to perform the way you would hope they would. So I want to move the discussion now to timed AI protocols for heifers. And essentially, if you look at the protocol sheets, which all of you should have copies of, there's 2 short-term protocols and 2 long-term protocols. And I want to begin first with the discussion of the long-term protocols. And this is more or less the MGA prostaglandin protocol is by far and away probably over time been the most used protocol in the industry. And by far and away, I think if we look at beef cattle artificial insemination, by far and away there's more sync programs being done and artificial insemination being done in heifers than in cows. But the protocol was developed back in the 80s by Ken Otey's group at Colorado State. And then, as you'll know, Gene Deitcher and Cliff Lamb modified the protocol from a 17-day interval between MGA withdrawal to prostaglandin into a 19-day interval, which really actually contributed to the total heat response and had a benefit relative to the degree of synchrony. The 14-day Seder is very similar in terms of the treatment schedule. It's a 14-day, Seder remains inserted for a period of 14 days, wait 16 days and administer prostaglandin. And as illustrated here, appointment breeding occurs at 66 hours. We were interested in seeing how these protocols actually compared on the basis of heat detection and had an opportunity to work with the Circle A Heifer Development Facility at Lineville, Iowa, where we can place large numbers of heifers on the heat watch system and actually look at what happens relative to activity both following Seder or MJ withdrawal as well as following prostaglandin. And if you look at the heat distribution patterns coming off of MGA versus the Seder, you can see that the degree of synchrony differs greatly between the two protocols. And that's simply due to the fact that the way MGA clears the animal system versus when you physically remove the Seder from the animal, it clears much more rapidly than what MGA will. If we look then at the distribution patterns in terms of estrus following administration of prostaglandin, there's an advantage to the degree of synchrony following the 14-day Seder protocol in comparison to MGA. But if you boil all the literature down and compare it both on the basis of heifers being inseminated as a result of observed estrus or straight fixed-time AI, our work from our group, from Daniel Mallory, that was a former student of mine, showed that there was really no difference in conception or pregnancy rates when heifers were bred coming off either protocol, either MJ or Seder, based on detected estrus. And Rick Funston's group has shown that there's no differences in terms of fixed-time AI pregnancy rates. The caution I would offer, however, is the fact that it's really important that if you are going to be using MGA, intake on a daily basis at the recommended dose is critical to success. So the next thing I want to talk about are the brief discussion of the short-term protocols, the multi-state Seder trial that Cliff led, and essentially what was done in that trial was a comparison of four approaches using the seven-day protocol. As you can see here, the top two represent a combination of detected estrus followed by an appointment AI at 84 hours. And then those were compared to a straight fixed-time AI approach. And essentially, the only difference in terms of the actual treatment schedules with these protocol comparisons was, as you can see here, GnRH was either not administered or administered at the time the Seders were inserted. And I hope it probably seems as though I'm going to be racing through a lot of this discussion, and there's a very thorough overview of these protocols in your proceedings. So in terms of actually showing you hard numbers, I just honestly don't have the time to do that. But the take-home points relative to that large field trial were first that GnRH and Seder insertion did not improve pregnancy rates after fixed-time AI. GnRH and Seder insertion did not alter the percentage of heifers detected in estrus or the distribution of estrus after prostaglandin. And really the take-home there was that a combination of detecting estrus and AI before cleanup AI enhanced pregnancy rates over fixed-time AI. So the last protocol I want to visit with you about is the five-day protocol, which was developed by Alan Bridges and in Mike Day's group. And essentially what this protocol involves is very similar in design to the seven-day protocol. GnRH at Seder insertion, prostaglandin 5 days later at Seder removal. But you'll notice here that there are two injections of prostaglandin that are recommended to be given. The reason for that, as Dr. Smith talked about here briefly in his presentation, is that when we administer GnRH, we create or cause the formation of an accessory corpus luteum. And because of the age of that structure, one injection of prostaglandin probably isn't going to be successful in successfully lysing that accessory CL. So the recommendation is to actually administer a second injection roughly 8 hours later. That then, in this instance, is followed by fixed time or appointment breeding at 60 hours with GnRH administered at AI. There's been some extensive comparisons of this protocol. Again, not taking time to really go through a lot of the numbers, but if you compare the work that's been done comparing the 5-day with the 7-day or the 5-day with the 14-day protocol, Essentially, the only significant difference in terms of pregnancy rate differences between those various protocol comparisons was work published by Sparks et al. Showing an improvement, about a 10% improvement in fixed-time AI pregnancy rates, and followed a fairly large number of heifers, over 600 heifers, with the advantage to the five-day protocol. So I want to take just a moment and show you some data from our heifer program in Missouri. What we do is we have a comprehensive database that tracks data in our all heifers enrolled in our system. All of those heifers are required to go through a pre-breeding exam, and it affords us the opportunity to really evaluate how some of these things that I've already discussed really play out more or less in the field. So Jordan Thomas in my program put together this data recently, and this data represents this table represents about 18,000 heifers in our program, and it's interesting from the standpoint, if you look at the relationship between fixed-time AI pregnancy rates as they correlate to reproductive tract score, and if you just go down the line here, tract score 1 heifers, 8% of those heifers became pregnant to fixed-time AI following the protocol administration, 32% of the 2s, 46% of the 3s, 49% of the 4s, and 52% of the 5s. Most of the heifers now in our system that track score 1 at the pre-breeding exam go to the feed yard because the breeding success, whether they're being detected or inseminated based on detected estrus or time bred, it just doesn't play out to where very many of those heifers succeed during the breeding season. So let's look at it in relationship. These three protocols are the three that are being used the most extensively in our program, the 7-day Cosync Cedar MGA prostaglandin and the 14-day Cedar prostaglandin. And what you can see here is I lumped together the 2s and the 3s relative to the non-cycling heifers. And again, there's over 18,000 heifers represented here. 37% of the heifers on the 7-day Cosync became pregnant versus 35% of the MGA prostaglandin and 45% of the 14-day Cedar. And if we look at it in relationship to the cycling heifers, the track score 4 and 5 heifers, 45%, 47%, and 51%. And you can see the differences relative to the degree of significance there. We've seen a great uptake in this protocol in Missouri, and it's actually come as a result of recommendations by the veterinary community, because at the time the cedars are inserted, the pre-breeding exams are being performed on the heifers. But the other thing is those pre-breeding booster vaccinations can also go in at the same time, so essentially minimizes trips through the chute and more or less combines tasks. So some take-home points for heifers. The protocols work. So based on where you're at in terms of your management and facilities, any of these protocols will undoubtedly perform for you. Choosing a protocol for fixed-time AI in heifers, I think, really should be considered in light of the cyclicity status, okay? And I think that's a big consideration, and I'm a big proponent of doing the pre-breeding exams or assigning reproductive tract scores. But as Dr. Smith pointed out, protocol compliance is really key in terms of the success that you're going to realize, and that's dependent upon product administration and timing of insemination. So I want to move now to considerations related to cows. The two protocols, and I'm not going to talk about Bos indicus this morning, but the two protocols that are recommended being used the most extensively in cow programs are the 7-day Cosync Cedar and the 5-day Cosync Cedar. And essentially, if you compare the protocols, again, they're very similar in design. The only difference being that the length of cedar treatment here, and again, the fact that you have to administer two injections of prostaglandin in comparison to the 7-day. And so there's two studies that compared the two protocols head-to-head, more or less, with a single injection of prostaglandin on the 7-day versus the two injection on the 5. Dallas Wilson in my program and then D. Whittier with a much larger data set are represented. Those two data sets are represented in the slide. The blue rows represent Dallas's work, and the salmon-colored bars represent D. Whittier's work. But you can see here in Dallas's work, we had identical pregnancy rates when comparing timed AI results between the two protocols. D. Whittier's work out at Virginia Tech actually showed a 3 percentage point advantage, which was significant, much larger numbers than what Dallas had in his trial with the advantage to the 5-day. In addition to that, our group in Missouri did on-farm field trials or demonstrations with the 7-day Coasting Seeder. We inseminated 7,000 cows, a little over 7,000 cows, and roughly about 70 herds. All those cows were appointment bred at 66 hours. The time day eye pregnancy rate average for those 7,000 cows was 62%. And Sandy Johnson pulled together a fairly large published data set on the 5-day and with over 2,000 cows and saw similar pregnancy rates. So some take-home points relative to consideration of these two protocols and choosing between them. When considering a choice between the 5 and the 7-day, I think it's really important to understand the fact that both protocols work effectively. There is published evidence that there is a slight advantage to the 5-day in terms of time day eye pregnancy rates, but I think you have to consider the additional trip through the chute and drug costs associated with use of that protocol. Again, some take-home points. The protocols do work. These are considerations that I think you need to bear in mind relative to use of time day eye in cows, definitely the age, the number of days postpartum, and the body condition. And then again, we can't emphasize enough product administration and timing of insemination. All of us that work on the academic side of this and have extension appointments are getting more and more calls from folks saying, I gave the wrong injection at the wrong time. So I swapped GnRH with prostaglandin or vice versa, and you obviously need some help troubleshooting if you get into a situation like that. So one of the things that actually, Jordan Thomas, a graduate student in my program, in as part of his program, taking the existing protocols and actually seeing if there aren't ways that we can actually manipulate those to a certain extent or manage them perhaps in a different way to facilitate or perhaps improve results without an awful lot of extra time and labor has been an area that we've focused on in the last several years, largely led from work that stemmed from Jordan's projects. And so one of the things that we have to consider is, and this goes back to what Mike talked about, is that when we breed cows by appointment, the cows that we oftentimes struggle with relative to reduced pregnancy rates are those that we're inducing ovulation on. And so that was a large part of the consideration relative to more or less this line of thinking. We pulled data from three of my former students' research projects looking at estrus expression and resulting pregnancy rates. And all these cows were on heat watch, and we had the opportunity to see whether or not estrus response up to the point of fixed time AI, as Mike talked about in his presentation, what influence that had on resulting pregnancy rates. And what you can see here is that the cows that exhibited estrus up to the point of fixed time AI, 72% of those cows conceived versus about 49% or roughly half of the cows that did not. So Jordan's idea relative to this was, the hypothesis behind this work was that delaying insemination of the non-estrus females after GnRH would improve fertility by better aligning the window of sperm fertility with ovulation. And more or less the idea behind this is, could you develop a fairly simple strategy that would better accommodate perhaps improvements in pregnancy rates with those cows? Jordan led three projects, split time AI to optimize the use actually with sex-sorted semen, which really was sort of the springboard to these next two trials where we looked at split time AI using conventional semen in both heifers and cows. All of this work and all of the work that I'm going to show relative to Breanne Bishop's work involved the use of Estratec patches. So the Estratec patches, as indicated here, were applied at prostaglandin, and then essentially those patches were read at the time GnRH was administered. So essentially, the cow protocols involved the 7-day Coasting plus Seeder protocol, the modification for the non-estrus cows at the 66 hours was a delay in terms of when those cows were inseminated, a delay of 20 hours. And in the case of the heifers, all the heifers were placed on the 14-day protocol, and similar to the cows, the non-estrus heifers, there was a delay following GnRH of 20 hours. So without going into the data in detail, essentially what all of those trials pointed to was, first, split-time AI increased pregnancy rates by 34% among the non-estrus cows that were inseminated with sex-sorted semen. Secondly, split-time AI increased pregnancy rates by 15% among non-estrus heifers using conventional semen. But in the cows, there was no significant improvement in pregnancy rates when using split-time AI with conventional semen in the non-estrus cows. So Brand Bishop's work, more or less, was designed to take this a step further and answer a question: can we determine when to administer GnRH based on estrus response with split-time AI? And the hypothesis here is when using split-time AI, because it did offer us afford us an improvement in pregnancy rates in the heifers, when using split-time AI, could delay administration of GnRH 24 hours after that appointed time, increase both the estrus response as well as resulting pregnancy rates. So Brand's work involved two different groups of females, shed over 800 heifers and 600 cows. The heifers were all placed on the 14-day CEDAR protocol. The cows were on the 7-day COSYNC plus CEDAR protocol. And essentially, in terms of the heifers, this is what the experimental design looked like. The estrus females at 66 hours, you can see here, either received GnRH or no GnRH at 66 hours. And among the non-estrus females, what you can see is GnRH was either administered at 66 hours with a delay in the timing of insemination by 24 hours, or in this case, the delay relative to the 24-hour delay. GnRH and AI were performed coincident with each other. So if we look at the pregnancy rate based on estrus response and treatment, basically, if we look at the 66 versus the 90 hours, there was no difference in terms of those that expressed estrus by 66 hours, 62 versus 64%, which you would expect that to occur. In terms of the delay, 59% versus 61%, comparing the two time points. And among those that were non-estrus, that failed to exhibit estrus by the 90-hour mark or 24 hours after the appointed time, you can see here there were no differences in terms of pregnancy rates based on when GnRH was administered. And if we look at the overall pregnancy rates, there was no significant difference. So I want to take just a moment and lead you through a discussion relative to comparing heat detection with the split-time AI approach. And Jordan and Brianne more or less put this data together, and I think it's relatively fascinating in terms of how it compares. And so if you go back to our work with the HeatWatch system and breeding heifers off of heat with this protocol at the Circle A Heifer Development Facility in Iowa, essentially what this slide illustrates is estrus expression following prostaglandin by 6-hour intervals. And so if we look at the percentage of heifers that exhibited estrus up through or at certain time points that were tracked relative to HeatWatch, we find that from 0 hours, or essentially from the time of prostaglandin up to 66 hours after prostaglandin, 74% of the heifers exhibited estrus, 14% exhibited estrus between 66 and 90 hours, 5% exhibited estrus after the 90-hour mark, and there were 7% of the heifers that failed to exhibit estrus during that 6-day synchronized period. So although this is not a controlled study, what we wanted to do was to actually compare the pregnancy rates of these heifers using the HeatWatch system in this protocol against the split-time approach. In this case, these heifers were all bred on the basis of observed estrus using HeatWatch, and in these two protocols that we just discussed relative to Brianne's split-time approach, where GnRH was either administered at 66 or 90 hours, you can see that among the heifers that were inseminated that exhibited estrus from prostaglandin to 66 hours, 61% of the heifers that were inseminated on the basis of detected estrus became pregnant, 62% and 64% relative to the split-time AI approach. If we look at those that exhibited estrus between 66 and 90 hours, similar percentages, 53% based on those that were observed or inseminated based on observed estrus, 59% and 61% using the split-time AI approach. And then greater than 90 hours of the no responders. You can see a slight advantage here in terms of those that were detected in estrus versus the two split time. But if, the bottom line is if you compare the pregnancy rates in total relative to those heifers being inseminated based on detected estrus versus using split time, very comparable results. So in terms of the cows, similar treatment design, all using the 7-day protocol. In this case, essentially what you can see is that among the estrus females, GnRH was either administered or not administered at AI, and among the non-estrus females, the timing of GnRH differs relative to when insemination was performed. And in this case, again, the delay among the non-estrus females was 24 hours. Without going into an exhaustive discussion of that data, basically the split-time AI data in cows showed that delayed administration of GnRH increased total estrus response by 5%, 85 versus 90%, but there was no resulting improvement in pregnancy rate. And I think over time, just adding numbers to it, there might be that possibility, but at this point, the data doesn't bear it out. So the conclusions when considering split-time AI: first and foremost, it is not necessary to administer GnRH to heifers or cows that express estrus prior to 66 hours when using either the 14-day protocol in heifers or the 7-day protocol in cows. GnRH may be administered concurrent with AI at 90 hours after that 24-hour delay for heifers or cows fail to express estrus prior to 66 hours, and the data did show a greater overall response in terms of estrus in the cows. So I want to conclude there, but briefly acknowledge the generous support we've received over the years from the USDA Competitive Grants Program. We've enjoyed great collaborations with a number of ranches around the country. I can't thank the students, faculty, and staff at Mizzou enough. And then we've also really enjoyed the relationship working with Stan Locke and his group over the last several years. I also want to acknowledge all the pharmaceutical companies and AI companies, as well as sexing technologies, for their contribution with that. I'm going to go ahead and conclude. So.